am from Arkansas, and my dad was a coal miner. That kind of makes me a coal miner's daughter.
That makes so much sense now.
All of them had that.
She had some fringe bangs.
Yeah, those were good.
That would be your role. Like, if we had a band, I think, like, you'd be the pretty one
playing
the tambourine.
Because you have to have a lot of talent to slap that thing on your wrist.
Absolutely.
Or leg. See, we're just, like, talking all... I'm so excited because I loved this movie. I cannot...
I felt humbled to actually get to talk with them. Like, oh, wow, I didn't know that you were this cool. Thanks for talking with me. I feel like a peon.
Yeah, you are.
Hey, everybody. It's Taylor and Greg. Say hi, Greg.
Hey.
We're so excited for you guys to be here today. We have a pretty awesome lineup today to talk to you guys about.
I think we're going to do Elvis, the recap on the movie. I love it. So much good fashion in that.
Uh-huh. Get it?
That was not a very good impression. But and also the man behind Elvis's jumpsuits. We have an interview with him. And
yes.
Let's just start off with Led Zeppelin's Whole Lot of Love.
So, Greg, tell me, since you are a hair aficionado, what do you think about Led Zeppelin's hair?
For the time frame, it was in, like, 69 was when that song came out, and it was their second album, and British. So, I mean, it seemed very... I loved it, but I love men with long hair, so I thought it was really cool. It wasn't very groomed, just kind of...
They were completely ungroomed.
Ungroomed.
Shirtless and ungroomed. This wild mane of hair just going everywhere while they're just like rocking out. Like they're just like the epitome of rock and roll to me. Coming from, as we're going to talk about with Elvis, but like Elvis had his whole unique style and his powerful voice. And you have Led Zeppelin, which is just like electric guitar and rock and roll. And their whole essence was just rock, 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 rock. I'm a huge Led Zeppelin fan.
Well, and they were performing 10 years and then their drummer died. And
so sad.
But I mean, they were in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 95. I mean, they've done it all. So, I mean,
they have done it all. I mean, the Kennedy Center, you know, did a big, huge honor tribute for them, which was incredible. My husband has made me watch that video about 5,000 times. And then they had some interesting like trivia facts, but I guess Robert Plant, after John Bonham, the drummer, died, Led Zeppelin couldn't go on. And then John Bonham's son played on stage at the Kennedy Center, which was kind of amazing. You know, like
cool.
Come full circle.
Yeah. But you know, going back to their style, besides just their hair, which was abundant, was just, they were one of those rock and roll groups that even though at that time, now they're a little bigger as far as size-wise, the people that are living, but they did it without a shirt on. They were kind of risque in their outfits at 69, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would have been fun to have seen them evolve in their fashion if they had continued to do that during the 80s.
I feel like they had like 80s hair. You know what I mean? Like
they before had, like, the 80s hair even happened.
Hair
yeah.
No. That's what I mean. Like they were like
pioneers in many ways.
To big hair. Yeah.
Yeah. But that time frame and just history, and you know, you're just coming out of the hippie era. It was refreshing and awesome where kids are rebelling and they're wanting to go rock out. I just think it was an interesting time in fashion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They kind of came like from this like, you know, peace and love to like hard rock.
Well, what else have you got, Taylor?
So speaking of another shirtless man, let's talk about Billy Idol, White Wedding. Let's hear a little bit of this.
Hey, little sister, what have you done? Hey, little sister, who's the only one?
Okay, Taylor, I'm telling you, after that song, which I didn't even understand the video very much, but I mean, it still was pretty to look at. I mean, that girl in the white dress and the veils and a lot of patent leather things happening. It was such a cool time. And 80s rock, it was MTV. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
It was MTV. It was 80s rock. Billy Idol. Oh my gosh. I loved Billy Idol as a kid. I didn't totally like get it all. I think I was like a little too young and immature to understand all of his videos. But I'm dude, older, I mean, so
I understood everything. Oh,
barely. By a minute.
How many people or singers have a costume at a Halloween store after that? I mean, he had such a distinct look. The bleach blonde hair.
Yeah, that lip.
The lip curl that was very Elvis, like Elvis too.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he idolized that a little bit, but he did it well. And he didn't wear very much clothes either, but when he did, it was always tight. They were sweating too much, and they were sweating in a lot of leather and plastic. So
yeah, a lot of leather. Do you remember that episode of Friends where Ross tried to wear leather pants, and he went to the bathroom, and they got stuck on his legs, and he couldn't get them back up, so they put baby powder in it?
That would happen to me. That would totally happen.
Yeah, exactly. His legs swelled or something. But
he was one of those performers that wore a lot of jewelry, which a lot of, you know, rock and roll people have tons of necklaces and tons of bracelets and double earrings. I just thought it was such an opulent time in
he fully rocked. 80s. He completely rocked full. He fully embraced, fully rocked the whole 80s rocker look. You know what I mean? Like, minus like the big hair, he just had everything else going for him.
Well, he could never grow his hair big energy. Because his hair was so bleached. So I think it could only grow
receding
that
hairline.
Yeah. And he's still bleaching it, which good for him. I think that's awesome. Well, another band that I love that has good hair is Aerosmith.
Aerosmith. Think about Aerosmith. Like they had such a long history in the music industry, but they did everything, you know, from starting out like in the 70s and choose band, like going into the 90s when Steven Tyler had his daughter Liv in his music videos, and Alicia Silverstone. And there, to me, there was like such iconic 90s fashion.
Yeah, and they're about to do a residency, I think, in Vegas, which is, I think, is amazing at this age.
Well, think about like when Aerosmith did the whole rap song with Walk This Way, you know, that was kind of unheard of for like rock and rap to me, because rap was just kind of becoming on the forefront in music in the 80s, and them doing Walk This Way with Run DMC was like such a legit awesome song.
It was a good collaboration.
Yeah. Well, why don't we hear a clip from that?
Can you believe that Aerosmith actually had 21 top hits? 21.
I can't believe it. I was obsessed with him in the 90s. I think it's because I was obsessed with Alicia Silverstone because she was in Clueless, and that's who I wanted to be when I grew up, because Cher's fashion was everything to me. Everything. I still have that movie on VHS.
I think I
which probably dates me, but that's okay.
We don't even have a VHS player, but we have that little
ditty. The thing about that, like, she put Aerosmith back on the map in the 90s to me with those videos. She became like, you know, like in the 80s, like you had like the video vixen girl, and then you had Alicia Silverstone in the 90s who totally like, she put their videos on the map when MTV was like everything.
No, no doubt. And his clothes, I know that my boyfriend worked at a store in Dallas, and they shut down the store for him to come in, Steven Tyler, to come in and shop. And he didn't shop in the men's section. He shopped in the women's section because that's how small he is. Yes, which was pretty awesome. And he had to have a lot of that stuff like cut down because he's so tiny. But he layered.
All of those rockers were so, so, so skinny. Just like totally emaciated. You think it's just from like too much drugs and alcohol. And
we're not here to judge people. Okay. We don't know what was going on behind closed doors unless TMZ wrote about it. But I thought his style was, I loved it. I thought he, out of all of them, well, the other guy, what was the guitar player?
Oh, yeah. He had big hair, too.
He had some big hair.
I can see his face. Slash, dude, I know it.
Slasher or something.
that was Guns N' Roses.
Oh, sorry. But I think this guy had really big hair, too, and I loved that about it. And I just liked the layers and the prints and the fringe. And I mean, he is not afraid to wear anything.
Oh, no. And he can kind of wear anything because he's so skinny.
Right. No. They're a good group. Love it. I'm going to go see him in Las Vegas.
You're going to see them in Las Vegas?
Mm-hmm.
You love Las Vegas.
I love a good Vegas. Slot machines. All right. Now, for Elvis, the movie, did you see it?
Elvis, the movie.
I know it was long, but it was so worth it. I saw it when I went home to visit my dad. I went and came back, and I told everybody, you've got to see this movie, and I made my roommate go. Just tell me what you thought.
Well, I thought it was incredible. I know that's like a kind of blanket statement, but seriously, like the cinematography, Baz Luhrmann is such a force in movie production. And like, he just has like such a unique style in his films that they're so distinctly Baz Luhrmann that you can tell by watching, like, this is one of his films. But it was very theatrical, but it was also really raw and really powerful and really sad and really tragic, because Elvis, he put rock and roll on the map. He's the king of rock and roll. And just to like look at his fashion and how he transformed from like his pink suits that were like baggy leg to his iconic jumpsuits that were crystal encrusted rhinestones, which we actually get to talk to the man who created those jumpsuits, which we're pretty excited about.
Just a minute. Priscilla in the movie, even when she was young, when she got older, I mean, her outfits were great too. That movie, I mean, it is amazing. He was like a show horse. They just worked him so much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they literally worked him to death. Like, he just kind of became a commodity. Just sad because, I mean, there'll never be another Elvis. He's one of a kind.
No, and then getting his humble beginnings, like, in the choir and learning to do his moves that way. I mean, it was a revival. Every time. I'm just sad that I didn't get to see him in Vegas. That would have been a fun one to have seen.
I think that would be like at the top of like, you know, bucket list, Elvis in Las Vegas.
Like the first year, maybe not the third or fourth, but you know, when he was still a little thinner, still wanted to be there, wasn't under any weird contract.
Before he was eating too many fried peanut butter, bacon, banana sandwiches or whatever it is, the Elvis sandwich.
It's a sad
story.
Probably
not good for your cholesterol.
No. Or your waistline. Anyway, same. I'm so excited for everyone to hear our interview.
Guys, this is a big deal. This is a big deal. So we got to speak with Manuel Cuevas, who is truly a living legend. He has created the costumes for basically every single star you can imagine, like from James Dean to Johnny Cash to Elvis. I mean, like
Dolly,
every big
Dolly,
name.
Dolly, don't forget Dolly.
Of course, can never forget Dolly. Dolly Parton. He's talking to him. It's like it's almost nerve wracking because like this man has literally dressed every icon in the industry, and he took the time to talk with us. So we're going to play our recap of part one of our interview with Manuel Cuevas. So, Manuel, again, it's such a privilege to be speaking with you today. We really appreciate your time. And something that's kind of fascinated us both is your energy and how you've been able to keep up this pace of your career for all of these years. And tell us, what keeps you going? What keeps you inspired and continuing to design?
Well, I wish I knew, really. The thing is that, you know, I keep growing up somehow, in age, that is, and I feel like I'm as full of ideas, you know. Is that I never worked an hour in my life, and what I do is something that I really love to do, and I don't want to quit ever, you know. It's just like more ideas. What we do is follow up the personality, the character. And what I can't, I don't need to kill myself. What I do is I coordinate some of the things that they wore before and we made for them before. And we just keep them in mind, and then I watch them act and do their thing. And then I could better that, of course. That's the idea.
Who gave you your big break? Who was the first person that kind of started putting you on the map?
Wow, you know, the people that put me on the map were actually my, when I really got into the Hollywood thing, let's put it right. that way, because I was just hanging out in L.A., and I was supposed to hang out for a month or so, and it's already been like more than like 60 years nowadays. You know? But I'll tell you what the people that really made in my life was to get to the heroes that I had as a 5, 6, 7 year old kid, mm-hmm. like the Lone Ranger, like Tarzan, like Johnny Weissmuller. To meet him in person and get to make him clothes in Hollywood, that was a heck of a thing for me. The Lone Ranger, although it wasn't the Lone Ranger that I had known as a kid, but uh-huh. it was the Lone Ranger, the 50s, the TV stuff, you know.
Right,
and I said,
right.
oh my God, it's so good. And
people that you idolized as a child and then later you were able to
live. And then know him. It's like meeting Eddie's head, you know. Wow, I am meeting the greatest designer in the world.
Right.
And then she taking me, you know, as a nice little kid, you know, holding me and saying, hey, you're the king of cowboy. You're going to do this and that and that and that. And then it's like doing Giant in 1954 for the first time in my life. I said, oh, my God,
mm-hmm.
this is going to be something else. And then she tells me, she says, you know what, make him a pair of jeans. And I said, man, what do you mean a pair of jeans for a movie? So she is the one that suggested. It wasn't Manuel that created the jeans for James Dean. It's just that, you know, all these opportunities came in front of me. And like doing my first fittings for Cy DeVore, Frank Sinatra, Johnny Weissmuller, Bob Hope. I said, oh my God, these people.
When did you switch into doing more Western?
I'll tell you, during and after that, because I kind of had my own thing going. I had a girlfriend that took me to the Pasadena Rose Parade. She changed my life by doing that. So I said, what the heck is that, Rose Parade? I didn't know until I went and saw it. I said, oh, wow. I could do better than this. But then I am in L.A. and I am in Hollywood. I am in a place where maybe that, to me, it's like the only place you can be to grow on in fashion. You know what I mean.
Absolutely.
Although I don't do fashion because I can't stand two pieces looking alike, you know. That's why I don't make socks. So the older I get, the less that I like the fashion industry. The multiple creation making one piece and trying to hit it in the world and be your star piece, and then you become successful. See, I was never for that. I just continued until today, you know. But what really inspired me, of course, is when I learned so much from Edith. Edith had taught me so many things. She even asked me at the beginning, she said, Manuel, have you ever entertained the idea of being the head of wardrobe in a movie? I said, you know, I had a feeling of that. He says, well, don't you ever do that. Don't you ever, ever do that, because you regret it, you quit doing what you do so beautiful. You are supposed to dress the stars only. The ones that are alive at the end of the movie. And then I got to meet Salvador Dalí. And all these things, he introduced him to me. And I ended up making shirts for him.
You know, it just sounds like your life has kind of just organically fell into the right.
And instead of admiring him, I was criticizing him. You know, look at his eyes, his mustache, his face. It's so different, you know.
Well, what I love about your design, though, is that I mean, they are so recognizably you. And I mean, they look perfect for each individual that is wearing it, whether it be a performer that's on stage or just somebody going out for the night. And I am obsessed with all the embellishments that you do or your team works on. Taylor knows I do love rhinestones, but do you think there's ever too much? Can you put too much embellishment on a top?
You know what? It's, I'll tell you, you and Ashley, please listen. I never thought that anything was too much. You know, and I had dressed people that they were an exaggeration in the public eye, you know, that I dressed. The guy that I thought it was exaggerated was Liberace, but I dressed him, and I didn't see no exaggeration. I just made the stuff as crazy as I could make it.
That's a dream for me. I want someone to do that.
People say, hey, I make me the craziest darn thing. I want everybody in the world to look at me. I said, oh, my God.
And they did. And they're still in museums everywhere. And I know that you've shown your works in museums, and it's in Country Music Hall of Fame and all. I mean, whenever I went to Nashville, I went through the museum up there, and I mean, the pieces are, it's a piece of art. It should be celebrated.
Manuel, something that I think about your clothing is that you created a persona with your clothing. It's not just the garment. It really defines, it defines the person, everyone from Johnny Cash to Elvis, which had a completely different aesthetic, from Johnny Cash being the man in black to Elvis and his rhinestone jumpsuits. You know, they had such their own look that were completely different, but still completely their own. And you were responsible for creating those looks. And I would love to get into your mind to know how you knew, you know, like looking at Johnny Cash, like this is what he needed to be in, and looking at Elvis and this is what he needed to wear. And then looking at the Beatles and their jackets. And it's just,
it's
your creative process. And for getting to know it, getting to know your clients.
What people don't realize is that they're looking at Elvis as a celebrity or performer. You were looking at Elvis as a friend, which is even crazier. And you're just making great clothes for a good friend of yours, you know. And coincidentally, the paparazzi or whoever was taking those images, that became their iconic look. You know, you were a part of each of those people's success, which, I mean.
Well, taking his name for an example, you know, he became iconic to almost all the entertainers. Oh, my God, I had Wayne Cochran, I had the Beatles, the Bee Gees, the whatever. Everybody wanted something like it. Mm-hmm. I said, well, these guys want to be Elvises.
Right.
Forget it.
That was a really good interview. And you know what? He was so gracious. We called and he took the time out.
It was like we've been best friends forever. He just talked and talked and talked in like the most conversational way. It wasn't like he was too busy or too important to talk to us. You know, I was just like, wow, this living legend is actually taking the time to talk with us.
And he's still doing it, which is amazing. And you'll hear more about that next week on our podcast. But
yeah, guys, you have to tune in for part two.
We're going to go shopping for sure. We're going to go there.
We have to go.
I want a full
I mean, we have an invitation.
Wagner outfit, all of it.
You want a full Liberace outfit.
Well, that's true. He did Liberace too. Yeah. I want it to be a little bit more Liberace.
I mean, think about this guy. I mean, he did Elvis' jumpsuit. He put James Dean in denim. He did Johnny Cash in black. So Johnny Cash became the man in black. He did the Sgt. Pepper jacket for the Beatles. Like, you can't get bigger than those names. There's not. There's no names bigger than those guys.
No. And he said one ever said they didn't like what he designed, which is crazy. You know, I do hear all the time, and people are always bitching. But it must be a good life to not have any complaints.
Seriously.
And still be able to walk.
And then even Salvador Dali, you know, the ultra famous.
Isn't that crazy?
Ultra famous artist who.
Well, I think just everybody wanted a piece of Manuel. So I need to have a
piece. And I do too.
Yeah.
I still do.
Well, you know what? This has been such a fun episode, Taylor.
I know so much in this. I just feel so grateful to have got to speak with Manuel that kind of like left me a little spellbound. I was a little starstruck. I don't know about you, but that's how I felt. Like, wow, guys.
Well, the reason that I focused on Led Zeppelin this week is because my dad came in town from Arkansas, and I took him to see Allison.
Did you eat squirrel? That's my first question.
When you go to Arkansas, you eat squirrel. When you come to Texas, you have Mexican food. We did a lot of barbecue and all that, but I surprised them and took them to see Alison Krauss and Robert Plant. They were here together. So it was such a good...
That's so sweet.
That he's doing a collab with her. And I think the song that we're going to end with, he actually covered before, and I think they just did it on a new album. But you've got to check out their new album together. It's so good. And we'll end with When the Levee Breaks, and hopefully it won't break on me. So we will see you guys next week.
And hopefully Greg won't break a hip.
No, not this week. Bye, y'all.
Bye, guys. Thanks. See you next week.